Demon should hear me. You're not a demon, are you?
It was licking me!
Are they slow moving, Gene?
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
No.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Planet of Terror podcast. I am your host, Cortez the Killer. This morning, I am joined by writer-director Scooter Downey, writer Sean Elliott, and Mr. Lance Henriksen of the fantastic independent horror production, It's in the Blood. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me this morning.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, we're happy to be here, buddy.
Awesome. So to give a little bit of a brief synopsis about the film itself features an estranged father and son who try to repair, come together one weekend and repair some broken bonds. The weekend quickly gets off on the wrong foot as the family dog has to be hastily put down. While out in the woods, the father becomes severely injured, and as they're trying to repair kind of these broken bonds, the remainder of film involves the father and son kind of trying to make amends, but knowing that there's monsters that lurking within the woods that will not let them escape the confines. But as the course of the film progresses, we begin to start to think as a viewer, are they real or are they representative of the much more darker and sinister monsters that lurk within the hearts of both men? So getting into the actual production, how did the idea for the kind of story come about?
The story evolved, I think, as we evolved. I don't think there was really an initial inspiration other than Sean and I were like, hey, let's make a movie. Let's make a horror movie, and we want it to be about two characters set in the woods. And, you know, we went and wrote probably 12 drafts of a script, and then we had, you know, multiple edits of the film. So we were constantly sort of chasing the story, but we knew that it was always going to be about the monsters of the mind. And that was kind of the idea that we were playing with from the beginning.
From a producer's standpoint, we had a pretty good sense of what we wanted to do from the very get-go because of budgetary reasons, we knew that we had to have a limited number of cast members. We knew that we had to have a limited number of locations. And then we also, after a large amount of research, you know, we came to understand that, horror and thriller was, you know, one of the best genres for independent filmmakers to make films in, because you stand the best chance of success, at least, you know, right out of the get-go. So we had some basic parameters that we established very early on that we knew we had to stay in throughout the course of writing this script, and that kind of helped direct us into ultimately creating the script that we ended up with.
Gotcha. Now, the central conflict there between father and son, was that there from the early goings, and everything else kind of fell into place around that? Because it's very much the kind of the core of the film, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, originally the script was actually written between two best friends, you know, two similar age best friends, and then as we got a little bit further down the road, we realized that you know, a father son story would probably be a little bit more compelling, and so it transitioned into that. We did always know that at the central core of the story it was going to be the conflict between the two main characters, but we didn't necessarily know that it was going to be a versus best friends, or, you know, two formally best friends, I suppose.
Gotcha. Now, the interactions between father and son, so the name of the son, October, is played by Sean, and Russell, played by Mr. Henriksen, feel very real and very personal. And clearly this is a family that had been through a lot, and they are still harboring some very deep-seated issues. So Sean and Lance, did you guys spend any time together pre-production? Kind of, you know, as the kind of central focal point of the film, again, the interactions feel very real and kind of personal. So do you guys, like, spend any time prepping before production to kind of have that chemistry and that interaction?
We did, yeah, we did. I think Scooter made a demand on us that we for about a week rehearse, you know, sort of rehearse to get into it, to get to know each other, because we didn't know each other before that. Not Sean and Scooter did, you know, but we had to build up some trust and find a language that we could that we would be truthful.
Right.
You know, it's a universal theme. I mean, what we're doing. I mean, I'm the perfect age to play a father. And, you know, because I am a father. And,
yeah.
And so we got off to a great start, and it just kept building from there.
Yeah, I remember about, I guess, a week before we started shooting, like Lance said, you know, Lance flew into Austin, and we were really lucky that his schedule allowed for that, because that, you know, that rehearsal time really, I think, really helped us build that rapport. But Scooter had us do a number of different exercises to help us kind of relax around each other and get into character, one of which was, I remember we were in this little rehearsal room at the studio that we were shooting at, and Scooter asks us to pick an animal that best embodies our characters, and then, you know, live as that animal for the next 10 or 15 minutes. And so, you know, as I thought about that request, and of course it was embarrassing for me, but, you know, Lance and I, both being Scooter's actors and kind of having to listen to what he said, we both kind of acquiesced and did the exercise. And I chose a young dog, you know, because I in my head, like, the character was like a young feral dog who was just kind of lost on the streets and confused and starving, and that was my idea of that character. Then, of course, Lance, in turn, happened to choose an old dog. And we kind of knew that the relationship was secured at that point when, you know, he was the old dog and I was the young dog, and sparks were going to fly from there. We knew it.
Interesting.
I did a German Shepherd, actually. With huge balls, you know.
It was very convincing. Very convincing.
And speaking of which, so that, you know, that first interaction between kind of father and son, you know, as October is getting to Russell's home, and he comes upon the injured family dog, that interaction is so powerful, and you pretty much know all that you need to within that interaction, and October trying to save the dog that's stuck in a bear trap, and Russell making a quick decision that, you know, it's no matter what he does, he needs to put down the dog. And that, it was such a powerful moment in the film in the early beginnings, because it quickly establishes there's some deep-seated issues here, and there's some real pain here between that's harboring between both men.
You know, there's another issue too, and that is that children spend their lives from the age of 12 or so starting to push away from the table to get, you know, there is a cosmic right for them to break off from the family and start their own family, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I think that issue is very instilled in all of us, so we understand it. Instinctively, we understand it. And that first scene that you're talking about, there is that element of at the same moment that we're putting down the dog and he's trying to save the dog, there is the element of, I have changed, dude, and I'm really pissed at this. You know what I mean? So it's also, I'm seeing him as the man he's become. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a great point. Like, he's kind of established himself on his own, and he's trying to do the right thing. But
yeah, all of those things were happening sort of simultaneously.
Right.
And when I saw it, I was really surprised how well it worked. There are a few scenes in that movie that stand up to any movie ever made, and that's probably one of them. And also the amputation scene, you know, getting my leg cut off.
Oh yeah, I was in the
theater. That scene had. That's an amazing
scene. Yep.
You know, and there's others that I love, you know, that, and really when you think about it, about movies, if there are three really good scenes in a movie, if the movie resonates, it means that it works. But we have many more than three. But the point is, though, that three good ones that are original really resonate with people. So.
Absolutely. Yep. Kind of overall, though, this is it's kind of a hard film to talk about without really giving any major, like, spoilers away. But what I can say is that there's the central conflict, and it's difficult for both characters, and they need to do kind of bring it out into the open and kind of come face to face with it. What I kind of want to commend on, and if you guys can kind of talk about this process, the way that the flashbacks are kind of shown in glimpses, and then you're kind of hit with a sledgehammer of a denouement at the end. Can I talk about that process and how you can bring the viewer along without showing your cards right away?
That was the most difficult part of the editing process for me, because you basically have two storylines. You have an A storyline of the father and the son in the woods, and then you have a B storyline of the flashbacks. And the way in which they are intercut together completely makes the movie, and the way that the information is revealed. So what the biggest thing that I realized editing was that almost in nearly every scene, I mean, we had to pace it out a little bit, but the more you are able to intercut back and forth between the story in the woods and the story in the flashback, the more relationship you can actually develop, and you can start to blend the worlds together, blend the sort of fantastic elements together, so that you're actually creating a new relationship. That's sort of the entire theory behind this sort of new style of filmmaking. But you know, it's a pretty classic, you know, way of storytelling where you have a flashback. But I think the sort of level of metaphor and symbol that are sort of playing on top of each other, that was something that was definitely found in the editing process. Made some surprising discoveries that weren't even necessarily in the script.
Yeah, you know, the flashbacks, you're right, Scooter, they became a deepening of how really deep the relationship was. You know what I mean? Between the father and the son. Because when people go through something as traumatic as what they, and they're still alive, it's pretty amazing. I mean, the relationship, it becomes deeper in a new way, you know. Really, really good stuff.
Absolutely. Now, Lance, we talked a little bit about the character of Russell, but as a just a fan of your work, and you've played a lot of great, interesting characters over the course of your career, this one, to me at least, while watching you on screen, feels a little bit different in terms of there's a lot of facets to Russell. Obviously a man that's kind of hardened by age and the experience that he's had with October, but also a little bit not only going with a bit of hardness, a little bit mean-spirited at times, but ultimately someone that has a heart and who deeply loves his son. Kind of talk about playing the character of Russell, and if there were any challenges with kind of playing this multifaceted character.
You know, Scooter and Sean really set up an environment that was very, very safe and protected for us. I mean, and that's an important thing, because we also did a lot of improvising, and you know, for anyone's first film, this was like a Herculean effort, because you have nothing in your past as a filmmaker to say this is going to work.
Right.
And so it takes a lot of courage to get in there and allow us to tell the truth about what we were feeling at any given time. But and so as a result of that, the more work we did, and some of it was shot in sequence, which was really great. But the more work we did, the more we felt that we were and I think, you know, everybody in our life, in everyone in who's lived at all, has many ups and downs. And of course, this movie is certainly a down, but it goes up. The up part, even with all of the things that are going on in that film,
right,
they're very up issue, and that is to be able to share the love you've got with your son. And no matter how many mistakes somebody makes, they'll always be your father or your mother. They're not gonna, mistakes in life do not make you a Martian. You know, you're always gonna be that for your kids. So I understand all of that, because, you know, I have been divorced a couple of times. I have two wonderful children, and I had to man up with all of that stuff. And so that's an experience that was useful, you know, it was very useful to me, because I didn't want to get caught acting in this movie, that's for sure. because the stakes kept getting higher and higher, and all we had to back each other was each other. So we were out there doing something really, I think now that I saw the finished product, very special. And I got to hand that to Scooter and Sean. You know, I give the nod to that because it's resonating on those sort of levels with audiences, because everyone in the audience has had experiences. And the way we handle ours gives them a chance to say, okay, I'll man up. Maybe they walk out of there like October does at the end. He walks down the road and he's in a way, there's grief, grieving in it, but there's also
absolutely, yeah, there's definitely that kind of feeling of kind of liberation and kind of coming to peace.
Yeah, you have to, because there's no, even God can't change the past, you know.
Yep. So switching gears for a moment, to remake or not to remake, that is the question. So in other words, what are your thoughts on this trend within the horror genre of remakes? You can kind of go around.
Oh, that's a lovely question. You could,
yeah. It is.
I could destroy my career by answering that one.
I was gonna say, Lance, I'm surprised I haven't heard of a Pumpkinhead remake in the works.
No, fuck. Oh, excuse my French, but no.
It's okay. It's not a family show. It's okay.
Good. Well, the only one I should have ever done was Pumpkinhead, and leave it at that, you know. But years later, people come to you with a stack of hundreds, you know, and go, hey, we want to go to Romania and make another one. I remember right after Pumpkinhead, I had to go to Milan because I had done a movie with John Woo. It was Hard Target. And we were on a tour with it, Distigious and all these other places. And this guy is kind of blonde, over suntanned guy met me in the lobby of the hotel we were staying at and said, I have a Pumpkinhead script that I want you to do, Lance. And out of respect for what I had experienced with Stan Winston, I read it, and I came back down to the lobby. I went up in my room and literally read it. I'm kind of a primitive that way. But anyway, I said to the guy, no, this ain't gonna work, buddy. This is really at this moment I had to say to him, it's a piece of shit. You got to rewrite it. The guy was devastated. I mean, it was, and he made it anyway, and it was a piece of shit. And years later, they asked me to come to Romania and do it, and it was an alimony situation, and I said, sure. But I remember the funniest moment was when they screened it at the Grumman's Chinese Theater, both remakes, and the director was there, and I was there with my agent to see it. And as soon as they were going to have a Q&A afterwards, and as soon as the lights started to come up, I just knew the film had ended. It was just starting to come up. I crawled out of the theater on my hands and knees, but they wouldn't see me leave. And the last thing I heard was, and we have Lance here. Lance?
It pans around to your seat and like it's an empty spot.
And yeah, and I was already down. I was already down by the popcorn machine by then. And my agent was laughing at his party. Anyway.
That's funny.
It was horrible.
Sean, Scooter, how do you feel about remakes?
I personally think that, you know, for the most part, they're just, you know, money-making marketing schemes, you know. I just think it's ridiculous because there's no new ideas anyway, so if you're going to, you know, do a remake of something, you might as well just, like, you know, just do a new story, you know, try to create something original. So, I mean, I understand why they do it, because, you know, you have an established property, you have name recognition, and, you know, teenagers now have not seen the old movies, so, you know, I understand why they do it, I just don't really see that it's enriching the culture by any imagination.
Right.
But you know what? They say there's only 9 stories. Is that it? Is there's 9, I suppose? You know, you know what I mean? If a computer was going to write a script, it would only have 9 possibilities of a plot line, right? That's what you mean by nothing's new, nothing's, you know.
Screwed. Yeah, exactly. There's sort of some basic thematic, you know, storylines and some basic plot situations that are kind of, you know, stock. But you can take those and it's just like, you know, human beings. There's certain types of, you know, human beings, the external, you know, and they're internal, shy and outgoing, you know, but at the core, there's an infinite level of possibilities and choices. And, you know, just even, for instance, Russell, your character in the film, like, kind of Russell was coming from the place of the young man writing about the old man. So there was a lot of, you know, kind of anger, and it was a little bit more one-sided, I think, his character, until you came in and really fleshed him out and created something personal. So unless you personalize something, like, it is going to be just the generic. So when a lot of these remakes, you know, are just kind of like these generic remakes of this exact same story, the exact same characters, but there's nothing is even fleshed out to like a higher degree. So yeah.
Yeah, I agree essentially with both of them as well. Yeah, I'm kind of at the point where I'm so sick and tired of seeing the same bullshit over and over and over again. You know, that if a remake comes out, I essentially just won't see it on principle. For instance, like there's a what's the Arnold Total Recall?
Oh yeah.
I don't know if it's going to be good or not, but I already know I'm not going to see it just because I refuse to support the same movie that I've already supported before again. Like it's so pathetic to me, you know, the complete lack of originality within the industry right now.
There's another good one to, you know, it's like The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. You have the European version, which is Swedish, and it's a fantastic 3 movies. And then they come out with an American version, and it stumbles so bad that I think that Fincher was going to do, I think he was going to do 3 of them like the Swedish did. But the first one, it did a nosedive, and I don't think that the second and third are going to be done.
But, well, the big buzzword right now is transmedia, you know? So, like, if you can't tell it, if you come up with a story and you can't tell it in comic book form, big game, you can't sell toys, it can't be a TV series. And a film, you know, it's not worth telling. Now, there are stories that, if you can do that, that's fantastic, but not every story fits within those parameters.
That's right. But hey, Scooter,
yeah.
Since I'm involved in one of those, I have a looking glass moment going to be happening, because I'm doing a comic, and the reason I did it is I want to see the movie made.
Right. No, I think that's great if you have an idea that,
that
fits within that. Like, that's fantastic. Those are cool stories. I actually enjoy, you know, the sort of mythology that can develop out of a really complex story.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, It's in the Blood. Like, there's no point in doing a comic book of It's in the Blood. Like, it's just a specific, you know, story that is going to be told in 80 to 90 minutes, you know. So that's sort of the problem is the artist, I mean, this is always the case. You know, you have to adjust what the patron is telling you to do, but you know, there's sort of less freedom in sort of your parameters of what you're working with. You're going to be basically working on something, an established property of something that's already come out. So you're going to be working within a set, which I always actually enjoyed projects in school where they said, okay, you're going to write a story, and you know, you have a dog and you know, a tulip and, I know, a bus, and okay, go and write a story with that. So sometimes that's fun, but I think in general, that's not really the motivation at all, of course, in the industry. It's just the bottom line.
Hey, there's another issue, too, though, for an actor. I mean, because you have to personalize stuff. If you're doing the same old story over and over again over, you know, throughout the career of movies, there's a subconscious frustration building, you know, that I know this story, I've heard this story. And when you're working with the people in these different places and different times, you end up wanting to, like, break out like King Kong tearing the roof off, you know. I want to swat an airplane down suddenly, and I don't know why.
Right.
You know, it's just, we're stuck in the same generation, in a way. You know, unless the Martian's landing, there's not going to be more than those 9 stories. You know, so it's pretty wild to have the kind of mind that Scooter and Sean have, where they're going to work their way through it, because there was a lot to do. And then you ask yourself momentarily at times, are we doing anything? And then of course the answer is yes, we are. And look at how hard they worked to get it to this moment in our history. It's pretty incredible to me.
Absolutely, yeah. It's one of the most one of the more unique horror films I've seen this year. And, you know, definitely a breath of fresh air in terms of just what's been churned out.
Hey, say that again, the first part, James.
Oh, it's one of the most unique horror genre films I've seen this year.
Yay.
And it's just a breath of fresh air in terms of just kind of what I've seen. And I've kind of been running my humble little blog for about 6 years now, and I get tons of stuff sent my way, and more than half of it doesn't even make it to the blog because I can't get through it. It's pretty bad stuff. So thank you guys in that regard.
Thank you.
Thank you, buddy.
Yeah, thanks.
So let's talk about shooting for a little bit. So you guys mentioned Austin, which I didn't know that Austin was so woodsy. I thought you guys were maybe shooting up in Northern California.
No, Austin.
Wow.
They got more snakes and spiders per square foot anywhere in the world.
Now, see, I can get down with that. I am definitely afraid of spiders.
I don't like them much. I don't like the ones that are brown and have a little yellow dot on their back. I don't even know what it is.
any funny stories to share during production? Did you guys camp out there at all?
Oh, man.
We, well, in the scene where Lance has his leg amputated, we had him tied up, you know, to the tree, and there were just, like, all these spiders that were crawling on his face, on his chest, and that's when I realized that if Lance is afraid of anything, it's spiders.
Well, I'm not afraid of them. I just don't like their company. You know, I remember a Scooter kept saying, well, we're putting some, you know, like, poison on the tree, and I realized what he was actually using is water.
Sprayer,
like to try
water.
To calm. Yeah, honey water. it was a rough shoot that way because we spent a lot of time in that woods. I mean, and we knew it coming and going, and we didn't have any like trailers to go sit in, and if we did, they were parked like miles away, so we never got to them. So it was as if we were camping out constantly. I mean, it was a great shoot. It really was. We were filthy, man.
Oh yeah, they didn't wash our clothes the entire shoot. So by the time we got to the end of it, it was so foul that the insects didn't even want to come close to us.
It's like a great repellent, man.
Exactly. You know, what's funny is that the most dangerous, even though there were kind of, you know, snakes and rattlesnakes and stuff, you know, in the woods, the most dangerous set that we worked on was the house, because that was just like actually this house. This guy lived in, and it was so just insanely like a garbage dump. I mean, there was this, I think some of our crew members stepped on broken glass and had to get tetanus shots.
Layla, one of our crew members, you know, trying to walk into the house, you know, part of the roof was like hanging down and crumpled in, and it was just a metal roof, and she cracked her head on it and split her head open and had to go get stitches. Like that was the most dangerous place that we were the entire time.
Wow.
But also there were, like, brown recluse, black widows. The place was an armpit.
Oh, man, yeah. There's a scene later on in the movie, where I don't want to get into the details, but where we have to go down to get in the water. Now, in real life, what was happening is, you know, this is Texas backwoods, middle of summer, and this water is just packed full of moccasins. You know, so they apparently, before we were scheduled to shoot this, we were told that they had been down there beating the ground and, I guess, you know, putting in the water, something trying to scare these snakes away. And so we get there, and, you know, Lance and I kind of begrudgingly get in the water because that's what the scene calls for. And nothing bad happens, thank God. But, boy, when we get out, this humongous water moccasin just comes crawling along or, you know, swimming along in the water. You know, so we kind of I think we dodged a lot of bullets in making this movie because there was – I mean, there were scorpions and spiders and everything heinous out there.
Those water moccasins are mean, though. I'm originally from California, and I've been in Dallas now for almost 7 years. And when I first moved here and heard about them and just how aggressive they are, because there's quite a few lakes here in the Dallas area, and friends that I have boats. And if you're like just even right on the dock, I mean, they'll come out of the water and go right after you.
I'm glad I didn't know that before we did this movie.
I'm glad I didn't know about it. Yeah.
You know, they do a thing called balling up, and when they'll get into a ball, like 10 of them, and just swirl around in the water. You know, they're doing some kind of mating ritual or whatever the hell it is. But and apparently one of the crew told me that they saw a ball. You know, and I said, "You what? What is that?" And after he told me, we got a stuntman to go into the water. I said, "Hey, yeah, you get bit, man. I'm not going to get bit."
No, it's funny. One of the crew members reported to us that they had gone down, you know, to, I guess, check out the water. And it was at nighttime. They had a flashlight. And they shine the light on the water. And just all they see are these glowing sets of eyes just reflecting the light. Just tons and tons of eyes looking at, you know, looking back at them from the water. It was a nasty shoot. No doubt about that.
It was a great one, though. I mean, really, all of this stuff fed into what we were doing. We were so hungry to do something real. Everything that went wrong we incorporated.
And I think that actually for the actors, the most difficult element was that we were doing really long takes. Like, we were doing like however much the red can hold, like 10-minute takes or something. And like just for one scene, and I would just have them, you know, do the scene and then continue to improv, and just like repeat lines. And if they look at each other and they don't feel like they're telling the truth, they call each other out. And so they're basically in these extremely emotional states, you know, anger, and, you know, they were crying together, and, they have to stay there, and they have to keep pushing and finding even more. So, like, you know, you're just clenching. I'm clenching the actors, holding them on, and drenching everything they got. So I think that was really also pretty difficult, because I think at a certain point, Lance just started flicking me off when he wanted me to, you know, end the take.
I'd look into the lens and say, "Fuck you, man." You know, because we were like brought right to the edge of our energy and everything else, and not, we wouldn't go over that where we became like dumb, you know. But he would push us. I mean, Scooter was relentless in terms of saying, I want you to try this, and none of us, Sean or I, or anybody who was in the film, would cop out. In other words, it wouldn't say, "I'm not going to do that." We would just continue, and we'd work and keep going. And that's what you're seeing on the screen. You're seeing really truthful stuff. That was the most important thing, because you don't want to get caught acting when you're dealing with things that everybody has lived, you know, one way or another.
Right.
Yeah, that was what made partly why the editing was so difficult, was there was so much, like, good material. There's a lot of good improvised material. There's so many different lines that the possibilities were like so great that it was extremely difficult to figure out, okay, what's the best choice. And ultimately you kind of just have to put the best real moments together, see if they do well, you know, and sort of put the connecting pieces in. And, you know, just, I'm personally thankful that, you know, Lance is really good at, coming up with stuff. Actually, the best written thing in the entire movie was not even written by Sean or I. It was written by Lance. He has a kind of monologue near the end. I mean, there's two monologues. Well, the first one we wrote, but the second one is actually better. It's the one he wrote. And he just, I remember he came to me the day of shooting and said, hey, I've got this idea, you know, for this sort of, I feel like he's got, this guy's got to talk about his wife. The thought, honestly, had never occurred to me. I knew we were kind of just ignoring that aspect. But he brought it to my attention. I was like, yeah, that's great. And so, yeah, actually Lance is a good writer. So I'm looking forward to his future work as a writer as well.
Hey, thank you, Scooter. That one I didn't write. It was in my body. It really was in my body, man.
Yeah.
Just came out. You know, I mean, it was really, I suddenly realized unless we touch on it, I'm not giving him his future in a way. You know, you've got to share with your child how you felt about the mother, you know, even though she's not there. I remember when I was really young and had my first child, I wanted to do a video, and the girl that finally I divorced after a very short time, she wasn't up for it, but the video was going to be me sitting there looking at a camera and her saying to my daughter, who will be grown up someday, we were young once, and this is who we were, and I just want you to remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, those are the gifts you want to give your kids, you know, and so to share that with Sean in that particular scene was about giving him that kind of gift. You know, I wanted to give him something.
Absolutely. And it was such a powerful moment in the film, too.
Yay.
So I'd be remiss if I didn't mention about the actual creature effects in the film. Very well done, and the kind of presentment kind of gave both a hallucinatory and kind of downright just creepy feeling to the entire thing. Was it a combination of both practical and CGI effects?
Yes. John and I both really like practical, and if we could have done, I think, everything practical on our budget, we probably would have. And I think if maybe we had spent a little bit more time in pre-production and just sort of try to figure out how to do it ourselves, because we are the cheapest people on the set, we could have probably figured out how to do everything practical. But we had a great special effects makeup artist whose name is Michael Mosier. He brought us the creature suit, and then we supplemented that with some CGI, because we wanted to. Some of it didn't work, and so we needed to sort of figure out, you know, we had this idea where, you know, the very first shot of the movie is of this walking stick, which is an insect collage itself, you know, look like a tree branch. And so we really wanted to sort of have the creature kind of have that effect where, you know, anytime you cut to a shot of the woods and there are just trees, like your mind can just start trying to see the creature everywhere because you know it can look like a tree. So we sort of needed to have a CGI effect because ultimately that creature is so thin and gnarled and, you know, textured that we couldn't really do that practically.
And I say CGI, like a lot of people when they say that immediately cringe, like, oh my God, it looked great. And again, the practical effects were really awesome as well. How'd they kind of come up? So you kind of mentioned a little bit about the design itself. So it was based off of that type of tree bug, you said?
Yeah. I mean, I think originally, and Sean can chime in, trying to imagine, you know, what was it like? What would guilt look like? Because that's sort of one of the major themes of the movie, and the monsters more or less representative of their guilt. So, you know, we were trying to think, okay, what would it look like? And, you know, we came up with a number of different concepts and hired some storyboard artists sort of and visual effects concept artists to sort of, you know, try to imagine it. And, you know, it went through a process. And ultimately we knew we wanted to do the Jaws kind of effect where you don't, you know, you don't show the shark at the beginning. You know, a movie is a striptease, so.
Right.
You don't just go full frontal right away. You gotta tease a little bit. The biggest, our sort of money shot was going to be the creature's face, you know, opening up.
It was fantastic. It was really well done.
Really.
Movies are a striptease, okay.
I like that. Good analogy.
I got to get back to the gym in that case. Because the man tits are not going to sell.
But it just depends on what audience you're trying to sell to, Lance.
Yeah, you're right. You're right, Sean. Thank you.
Yeah, that's the glass half full perspective.
I did an MMA fight with a guy in this thing that I was doing, and the guy was like, he was like 240 pounds of muscle, right? And I did, right before we started fighting, I said, look, just watch out that my man tits don't slap you in the face.
Plans a secret weapon when fighting.
Yeah, exactly.
We should do a movie with Lance where he plays a superhero, or his superhero powers is man boobs.
That'd be awesome. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Could be a transmedia project.
I remember, everybody's born with their own particular defects, physical defects, I mean, not of character, but anyway, this guy said to me, we're going to put you in leotards. And I said, oh, I don't think you should, man. So I come walking out on the stage in the fucking leotards, and he goes, you're right. When you're right, you're right. I didn't get enough milk when I was a baby. You know, it's like, those legs are a little bit crooked.
That's funny. So reception towards the film looks like it's been pretty solid so far. Can you guys kind of talk about your research?
Hey, tell them what we won, Sean,
All right, well, thus far the total tally that we have on a screened at 23 festivals now. We've actually been accepted to, roughly 30 festivals, but we screened at 23. We've got 8 Best Pictures, two Grand Prize Awards, 3 Best Actor Awards, and 1 Best Music Award. And I think that's it. Scooter, did I miss any there?
Not that I could tell, no.
All right, yeah, so... roughly speaking, that's what we've got thus far. So, yeah, we've been tremendously successful, and I've had a really, really great time doing the film festival circuit, and, just hope to keep on moving up from there.
The way it's resonating with audiences is pretty great. I remember in Louisville, right as soon as they started a certain scene, a woman got up and left. She said, they should have told me. And, she was walking out, and I... buddy, I think it was my older daughter, and I said, yeah, this movie's going to be a hit, man. Somebody just walked out.
You guys just recently screened in my backyard at the Texas Frightmare Weekend, was that right?
Yeah, we did.
How did that go?
It went really well. We actually ended up, when I had done my outreach originally trying to get in touch with you and some of the other horror websites, obviously I missed a number of blogs just because there are a lot of them out there, and somebody who had seen the film at Texas Frightmare Weekend, it turned out, was a reviewer and a blogger, and ended up writing an article for us that was really, really nice, and he really, really enjoyed it. So it's always amazing because you never ever know who's going to be in the audience, and you never know who it is that's going to see it and what they're going to say. So it's always kind of like a Christmas morning, the day after a festival, waiting to find out how it was received, if they liked it, if they didn't like it, and all those things. It's just, I guess as a filmmaker, that's one of the kind of rewarding parts about this, as we're getting into the marketing and distribution of it. Like, now that we're finally getting to put it out there and we're starting to get the feedback from the audience, that it really gives you the impetus to keep on going, especially after having been making a movie for so many years and not really seeing any results or return from it. Like, finally getting to this point where people are resonating with it, enjoying it, and giving us positive feedback. It's a great experience.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Any upcoming festivals or screenings that you would you guys would like to mention?
Well, we've gotten accepted to actually a couple pretty big festivals that we're very excited about. One is the Little Rock Film Festival, which is I think it's the end of this month, if I'm not mistaken. Then there's also the Waterfront Film Festival, and both of those fests have, are very high. Like, Waterfront Film Festival, I know, is rated one of the top five festivals in the world. Then, let's see, the Little Rock Film Festival is another highly rated film festival by SAG Magazine. It was, like, one of the top 25 festivals worth the entry fee, and a lot of the Oscar films actually came out of the Little Rock Film Festival, like Winter's Bone and some of the other documentaries that have ended up going on to get Oscar nominations as well. So we're very excited about those. And then, of course, we're finding out about more all the time. So it's the best thing to do is really just to check the website, because the calendar is constantly being updated with new screenings.
That's awesome. And what's the website for our listeners?
It's www.itsinthebloodthemovie.com.
Awesome. So kind of wrapping things up here, any projects you guys would like to mention that we can look forward to in the future? Anything you guys are working on?
Yeah, we're developing, a number of different projects right now, probably six in total. We're just to see, who's going to bite on any one of them. But probably, for instance, for your audience, we're developing another Psyche saga, but this is basically a zombie movie told from the perspective of the zombie, of a zombie trying to regain his humanity. That one's called Existential Memoirs of a Zombie. So, we're developing that right now, so hopefully that'll be something we can show you guys, in a 5 or 6 years from now.
See, no, that sounds great. That sounds like a really unique concept. Lance, anything coming from you? Anything working on currently?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Heard it, though. I mean, it. No, I there's a lot of irons in the fire. I got to describe it all for an actor as being a kiss in the dark. You don't know who, what, why, when, or how it's going to happen, but they call you suddenly out of the blue. That's why I'm divorced twice, because women can't stand that shit. But there's some movies in the works. They're making the deals and the offers on them, and there's quite a few, actually. And it's becoming the hardest part right now is I'm getting a lot of offers from independent filmmakers that have absolutely no budget. And it's very hard to say to them, look, I can't work for a cheese sandwich because I have a family to support, And so a lot of those are coming in, and out of respect for writers and people that are starting out these things, I do read them and I do consider them, but it's really hard, man. You can't do every movie, You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You only have so much that you can do. And also, I'm writing a comic right now for Dark Horse Comics, and I've got a lot of things on my plate, a lot.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's terrific. I'm really grateful.
Awesome. Well, gentlemen, I thank you so much for your time this morning. That's all I had, and huge honor to be able to sit down and talk to you guys about the fantastic film, It's in the Blood. Continue best of luck with the promotion of the film and getting it out there. I really can't wait to see it get out there more and hopefully you guys get distribution.
That's going to happen.
Yeah. So I'll continue to mention it as much as I can on the blog. And again, continued best of luck.
Thank you, James.
All right. Thanks a lot, James.
Glad we finally were able to pull this off.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Thanks again so much. And for all of our listeners, thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you on the flip side.
A demon should hear me. You're not a demon, are you?
Who is licking me?
Are they slow moving, Chief?
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
Shall I say more, but I don't want to ruin the surprise.
Hey, James.